Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Elaine B., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Today's date is Wednesday, September 30th, 2020, and today we're reading from the Big Book. We're continuing Bill's story. We are on page 8, reading the last paragraph, which begins with, "My musing was." Today's readers are Lorraine N. for the 12 Steps, Rhonda R. for the 12 Traditions, Faye B., Pam M., Leah S. will greet our newcomers at the end of the meeting, and Leslie M. will close us out with some important announcements for today. The reference number for the 10 a.m. meeting for yesterday, Tuesday, September 29th at 10 a.m., is 15448. That's 15,448. And the reference number for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting for Wednesday, September 30th, is 15456. That's 15,456. DOA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Lorraine N. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning. Lorraine N. here, recovered compulsive overeater in Oregon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you so much for the opportunity to do service this month. Have a great meeting. I'll pass.
Thank you, Lorraine. And okay, and I will now ask Rhonda R. to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. Thank you. This is Rhonda R., grateful, recovered in Georgia. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And thank you so much for the opportunity to do service this month.
Thanks for taking it. Thank you so much, Rhonda R. Appreciate it. Okay, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we do ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted using star 1, please. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We are in Bill's story on page 8, paragraph 4, and I will now ask Faye B. to please begin reading.
Good morning. I am Faye B., a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater, originally from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, but recently arrived in Mesa, Arizona. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. It was years since I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wondered how he had escaped. Of course he would have dinner, and then I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. He was sober. Those words in italics there are so important, I think. I remember my sponsor explaining to me early on when we began reading the Big Book together that whenever words are italicized within the text, that they are really, really important, because at the time the Big Book was first published back in the 1930s, italicized text was extremely expensive. So they chose very carefully the words for which they were willing to ante up more money. So this was incredibly important to Bill. He is seeing someone in a different light, someone who has had a spiritual awakening. It would become a pivotal character in his recovery, but who, he explains further along in this graph. about how they've cavorted together through alcoholic adventures. And we've seen through his eyes how lonely and isolated he'd become, and most of us, I know I have, had had similar experiences. He explains further on in this graph about how excited he was to try to be able to capture the past. He says, there was the time that we had chartered an airplane to complete a JAG. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. Well, in my case, so are compulsive eaters. I had my friends who I ate with, ones who were compulsive eaters as much as I, and I think we used one another to fuel our binges. But one stands out to me as much as Bill's friend here. It brings back to me the memory of my first brush with OA back in the early 1990s. I had returned to my hometown on vacation and I saw an old friend. She was sober. She had not only lost weight, her personality was transformed. She was calm, serene, loving, kind. She was all about living in the steps and performing service. She clearly had had a spiritual awakening. And when she talked to me about OA, about the treatment facility she went to, and her experience with OA and working the steps, it very much parallels what is happening here. And I wanted what she had. I did go find an OA meeting at the time, but I didn't stick with it. However, the seed was planted. I've met many additional fellows since that time. Recovered fellows who are sober and have what I want. And I'm so grateful for each and every one, from my sponsor to all the fellows I've encountered at live and other forms of meetings these days. And I've finally, by the grace of God, recovered and am recovering every single day. And I thank God for that first person who appeared to me sober, as this friend of Bill's was sober. And I'm grateful for my fellows here. Thank you so much, Elaine, for your service and all my other fellows on the line. And I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to give service this month. With that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Fabi. Appreciate that. Okay, so we deeply value your experience. We do ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. If you'd like to comment on this powerful paragraph about Eddie, please press star 1 to unmute and let me know your name.
Heather W.
Heather W.
Kathleen O.
Kathleen O. Anybody else want to jump in the pool? The water's fine. All right. Well, let's just get rolling with Heather W. and then Kathleen O. Please go ahead, Heather.
Hey, this is Heather W., recovered here in Baltimore. Am I going first?
Yes, please.
Okay, cool. Great. Hey, good morning, everyone. Heather W., recovered here in Baltimore. Super grateful to be on the line. I haven't been able to call in like all month since I went back to teaching, but I'm able to call in today, so I'm very grateful for that and grateful that we are on just such a powerful paragraph. You know, this is really like the turning point in Bill's story. You know, we have his story before Abby comes, which is the story of addiction. You know, I've been there, like, you know, every attempt to stop proved impossible, and every binge just gets worse and worse, and the control or the illusion of control gets less and less until Bill is in, you know, a tiny little black hole of his addiction, like I was in with mine and food. And then after Abby comes, it's like he's climbing out of that hole. You know, he gets closer and closer to the light. And it ends, you know, Bill's story ends with him talking about being of service and the joy and the fun of it. So this is really, really just a pivotal paragraph in his story and in my story, right? And what I always share out when I'm working with a sponsee in this is when he says, unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. And just that selfishness when we're in our addiction, right? He thinks Ebby has just escaped a place where he was committed for alcoholic insanity, and the only thing he cares about is drinking with him. You know, it's like we're so selfish, we're so incel. And then when he shares out his coming was an oasis in the dreary desert of futility, well, what's the futility? What's futile in his life? Stopping drinking. He understands that stopping is futile, that he can't do it. Right? All of Bill's story preceding this is him, futile attempt after futile attempt to try to stop drinking, right? And so really, Bill here is getting to step one, right? He realizes he has no control. He has no power. It's futile. He cannot stop, right? And so I just think that this is really powerful. And as was shared, you know, it's like we all have our Ebby. And I remember being at an OA meeting because I was in OA for 6 years before I truly took step one. You know, before I worked the book as I needed to and was able to recover. And I remember, you know, the woman who I asked to be my sponsor sharing that she was recovered and that the food didn't call to her and that there were no quote unquote food slips or anything like that, that, you know, she knew her alcoholic foods and she didn't eat them. And I'd been in program, you know, longer than her and I didn't have that. And I had to admit that, you know, and I think about when I'm around other recovered people or when I've gotten to go to the past two vision conventions, just you see it in people's eyes, you know, and Bill's about to say that about Ebby in the next paragraph. So this is just so powerful, such a turning point. And I'm so grateful, like Bill, my story has a turning point, you know, and now I'm just moving out of the darkness into the light. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you all for letting me share.
Thank you, Heather W. Kathleen O., you're up next, and then we'll take more people to share on this powerful paragraph. Please go ahead, Kathleen.
Thank you, Elaine. Good morning. This is Kathleen O., recovered in smoky Northern California. And thank you so much for your service this morning, Elaine. Oh, my gosh, how I can relate to Bill sitting alone in the house drinking and being interrupted. I can remember so many days where I would find a place to be alone surrounded by all my favorite binge foods. And I hated it when someone interrupted a good binge. I mean, it was like horrible. You know, and I also had a really good eating buddy. Like, you know, he drank a lot with Ebby in the good old days. And I had a really good eating buddy. So I can relate to him being able to drink openly with a fellow drinking buddy. I always thought it was more fun to eat with a friend who also suffered from this disease and who also couldn't stop once she started. And I remember one time, I mean, we would do these crazy, crazy things with food. I remember one time vividly, we wanted to see who could fit the most bazooka bubble gum in their mouth. And we did that and just laughed like a couple drunks. And, you know, just like Bill thinking that Ebby, you know, his coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. You know, thankfully for Bill, along with being selfish, he was feeling very hopeless. And being hopeless and seeing hope in recovered people was how I finally got on board with the solution. To find a way out of hell, the hell I was in, I was hopeless, I was desperate, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, did I want to do the work that was required? I mean, I knew if I kept doing what I was doing, I was going to keep getting what I was getting, which was fat and miserable. So I wanted a life that was not all about the food. So a way out of hell, neutrality around the food, you know, like Bill, I saw hope and I was willing to jump off a bridge if it meant getting out of that hell. So the 12 steps, it isn't about just going through the steps with our own Ebby, but then living them every day. You know, I could only be healed from this obsession of the mind by a power greater than myself who could restore me to sanity. And this really does work. I've been in relationships with recovered overeaters for decades. And, you know, there's no other way of stopping. I mean, it's like I've never seen anyone stick around more than a month. In the other things that I used to try to do to lose weight, but in this program, people are recovered for years and decades. Sorry, that's my dog sitting next to me talking. You know, so in this program, we all have each other's backs, and with that combined with the power greater than ourselves, it's what makes this different, and it's what makes it work. And having freedom from the food and being able to live a life where that's not my focus every day is just truly wonderful. And with that, I pass. Thank you, Elaine.
Thank you very much, Kathleen O. Okay, we're going to take another lineup now, people who'd like to share. If you've shared in the last couple of days, we ask that you hold off so others can share their experience. Who'd like to comment on this paragraph?
Larry from Northern California.
I heard Larry.
Donna C.
Donna C. Donna C.
B.
Paul L.
Donna B. I heard Paul L.
Yes, ma'am. Lorraine.
Anybody else? Lorraine. Okay. First initial of your last name, Lorraine.
Lorraine W.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else? I've got Larry C, Donna B, Paul L, and Lorraine W. So why don't we get started with those? And excuse me, Larry C, you will be up first, followed by Donna B.
Thank you. My name is Larry G, and I'm from California. Oh, my God, this is a powerful paragraph. Thank you so much for those of you who shared so far. I'm getting so much out of it. You know, Bill W. is sitting there with Abby, and he has euphoric recall. He's romanticizing his great times with booze, and he had some great times. I did too. I had great times with food. I remember one time Thanksgiving going to Memphis, Tennessee with my family and having Thanksgiving buffet at the Peabody. And this was a room the size of a football field, and the buffet table went on and on. And I was like a child. I was like a kid opening up Christmas presents. And booze was Bill's friend. Bill worked on Wall Street, and he didn't have the confidence. He didn't have the skills to compete. I was on Wall Street for 30 years. It's a blood sport. It's a dog-eat-dog business. And while I used booze for the first 4 or 5 years, up until I was around 28 and got in Alcoholics Anonymous, from that point on, I used food. I ate other people's lunches. I overextended my expense account. I brought in food so that I could eat that food. I would buy a dozen donuts, eat them on the way, then have to go buy another dozen donuts. And so the pain of low self-esteem and lack of confidence, I medicated with myself with food. And then something happened to Bill that happened to me, and that is his friend turned against him. You know, alcohol now became his slave, the slave master. He became a slave, as well as food became my slave master. I became a slave. And I sat in my living room alone on Sunday, May 17th, and I cried out for help. And Abby came in the form of my future sponsor in visions. And what she said was, I want you to get on this call. And I probably said, Bill said the same thing. I don't know. This is just, you know, a small paragraph. But what I said to myself, not another friggin' meeting. Just give me the secret sauce. Give me the secret. And something magical happened. If you would have told me 6 months ago, Larry, you're going to go to this meeting with this group of people. You're going to study one paragraph a day out of the big book, and your life's going to be transformed, I would have said, you know, what are you smoking? Because I don't get that formula. But today I am recovered from this disease, and I'm loving the ride. And I thank everyone on this call. I pass.
Thank you very, very much, Larry G. Donna B., you're up next, and you'll be followed by Paul L.
Good morning. This is Donna B., and I spell my name D-A-N-A, calling from Denver, Colorado. What strikes me is that from a phone call, Bill was able to elicit that Abby was sober, that the state of sobriety was so profound and so notable that it was perceived over the phone. And I think that's true for being entirely abstinent, that once I became entirely abstinent, my whole comportment changed. There's a solution. It talks about all of our ideas being completely rearranged, being so profoundly changed, getting rid of all of our old ideas. It's impossible not to notice the state of sobriety, even over what was probably a short phone call. And without even discussing his state of sobriety, Ebby has already triggered Bill's thinking, Bill's memories, Bill's anticipation. So the state of sobriety is so profound in even just subtle communication, in being witnessed from a distance. I don't know that I can say I have only one Ebby. Later in this story, there's the question, what happened? What happened? And I think that that's such an important question to ask when I have the opportunity to witness recovery in anyone, any day, all the time. And I'm grateful that there are so many people who exhibit recovery on a daily basis, so that I have the experience of witnessing it so frequently. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Donna B. Paul L., you're up next, followed by Lorraine W. Star one to unmute, please, Paul.
Paul L., grateful to be here. Abstinent. Tomorrow will be my 90 days. And I'm really happy to be here. And I like the reading. I like, you know, especially what stood out to me was when you talked about Ebby and unmindful of his wearfulness, and we talked about the selfishness he had, and I could really relate to that. You know, going out to eat dinner with people that were morbidly obese, unmindful of, even in early recovery here in LA, I'm unmindful of their welfare. It was pointed out to me that it wasn't a good idea, and there are lots of Ebbies, I thought, as people were saying, in my life. There was about six sponsors that turned me down at first because I couldn't stop eating before I go through the steps, until one very, very amazing lady explained to me that I can't stop because I don't have the needed power to stop. And she took me through the steps, even though I was still bending and I was so frustrated. I thought it was the one that it was going to work for. And as a result of working the steps, the obsession to overeat was relieved. And I'm still working on what to eat and what I know what not to. Now I'm working on what to eat. And, I've lost weight to get down to my fitness levels that I'm comfortable with. And everything is, you know, now today it's just living by spiritual principles. And I think that's what, you know, when Ebby said, I got religion, I think he's talking about living by spiritual principles, even though he didn't use those words. And that's what I tried to do today. And honestly, I do struggle. I struggle connecting to God and getting irritable and all that stuff. And I work on that very hard. I'm in a season, I guess, a growing period. But I'm so glad you guys are here. And I had the opportunity to listen to this meeting while I work. It's usually when I'm on here. And I'm Paul L. from Northeast Florida, a little beach town. And I do sponsor people. So I'll hang around after the meeting. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Paul W. Paul L. Lorraine W., you'll be up next, and then we'll take another lineup. We're reading and commenting on page 8, the last paragraph, which begins with, my musing was. So please go ahead and share, Lorraine W. Star 1 to unmute, please. I believe I had a Lorraine W. in the lineup. If you're speaking, we can't hear you. And So, okay, well, we'll go ahead and take a lineup. Again, we're on the bottom of page 8. My musing was, who would like to comment on the, oh, and if, though we value your experience, we do ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others can share their experience, true. So if you would like to share, please press star 1 to unmute and give me your name.
Sandy K.
Sandy K.
Christine M.
Christine M.
Lorraine W.
Oh, there's Lorraine W. We're going to put you at the top of the list. Please go ahead. I mean, anybody else want to get in the queue while we got it going here?
Sherry Josie.
Sherry Josie. Missed that last one.
Felicia D.
Felicia D. Great. Okay. We may have time for a couple more after that. So let's get started with Lorraine W., followed by Sandy K. And then we'll have Christine. Oh, hang on just a second. Let me give the lineup. Sandy K., then Christine M., Sherry Josie, and Felicia D. So thanks so much, Lorraine W. Glad you got in. Please go ahead.
Thank you for everybody for showing up for the meeting and doing service. Again, my name is Lorraine W. I am a relapsing. I have been relapsing, but for today, I have 9 weeks without my alcoholic foods. And as I read this paragraph, as it was read, and I have it in front of me now, this reminds me of Father's Day this year. I was ready to walk again, walk out of the room, walk out of the meeting, walk out of, and I mean walk by hanging up the phone. I'm not coming back. I remember going to my closet, my prayer closet, and I said, God, if you want me to stay, I don't know what you want me to do, but I'm super morbidly obese. I don't know what else to do. I'm going to meet, and I'm just wasn't clicking, and I'm ready to go, walk again. And then my Ebby was someone I had known for nearly 40 years from program, and it a call out of the blue. And they were sober, and they called me. And they were sober. They were sober from the alcoholic foods, and they thought of me, calling me, saying, hey, I was thinking of you, because they had just been at a marathon, an L.A. marathon, and I came to their mind, and they called me. And from that day, I'm not saying immediately that day I called somebody and I was sober or abstinent, but I know within those 2 days, because I poo-pooed her at first. I'm like, I don't hear this. But I thought about what she said. I called the person that she referred me to. I called that person, took my information, called me back. We had a long conversation. They were sober. They told me what I needed to do. And I did it. And followed directions. But for right now, I just know how insane things have been. The other person I had called that told me about their insanity. I didn't know them personally. I just knew the person who called me, I knew them. I know what they had been through. And the thing that is, so this italicized, he was sober, or she was abstinent. She was practicing. It's just so important. I was told this is why this is italicized. This is the service work. This is the very thing that is vital for permanent recovery, this service work. That's why it's important for this meeting, for everybody here, for me, I'm a little selfish, but we're here for each other, for permanent recovery, to reach out and tell our testimony. I always call it a testimony, but tell the testimony of what these 12 steps have done and are doing. And that could be done for me and for you. And I thank you all for being here, sharing your testimonies, and with that, adapt.
Thank you very much, Lorraine W. Sandy K., you're up next, and you'll be followed by Christine M.
Good morning. This is Sandy K. from Florida. I want to take a little, and I am a grateful recovered compulsive overeater. Very, very grateful. I want to take a little different tack on this paragraph. I never had an Ebby. I was in therapy for stress. So I waddled into my therapist's office, and after, I guess, a few months of therapy, she mentioned OA. And I said, oh, no, I tried that a few years ago when I was living in Manhattan. And she said, well, you might want to try it again, or you might want to be hospitalized. At that time, 35 or so years ago, there were no treatment centers. You were hospitalized. And I said, oh, no, I don't want to do that. So I went to my meeting, and I found hope. I found hope for the first time, and I stayed. But this paragraph reminds me that I wish someone had said something to me when I was shopping in Lane Bryant. I wish someone had said something to me when you looked at me and I was like 5x5. But nobody did. So it took me to get to the point where I was emotionally so stressed that I did need to go to a therapist. And thank God for her. So my lesson for reading this story and this paragraph is, when I see someone and I've already engaged them in a conversation, I'm going to mention that I'm in OA if they are, looks like they're, you know, out of control when it comes to weight. And as a matter of fact, I had lunch with someone a couple of weeks ago. Little did I know when I was meeting him that he really, he was obese. And I mentioned to him, I said, you ever hear of OA? And he said, no. But he didn't say to me, what about it? He didn't ask me any questions, so he really wasn't ready to hear it. But hopefully I planted the seed, because I said to him, I used to be heavy, and I used to have a problem, and I found a solution. But because he didn't ask, I didn't say anything. But I did plant the seed, and that's what we should be doing. At least that's what I want to be doing, planting the seed. All right, I pass.
Thanks so much, Sandy K. Christine M., you are up next. And Sherry Josie, you'll be after Christine. Hi, Christine.
Hello. Hello, Elaine. Thanks for your service. Thank you, everyone on the line, for your service. My name is Christine M., gratefully recovered in Missouri. I'm so grateful that this story, that Bill put his story in here for identification, because I can definitely identify into this whole story, especially the ego, the selfishness, but the word that really sticks out to me is interrupted. Anything that got between the way, and anything that I thought was going to get between, or anything that got between me and my dope, which was me and my food, had to go. It didn't matter whether it was grandkids, whether it was kids, whether it was, you know, schoolwork, work, it didn't matter. I would just bulldoze it down and push my way past whatever it was to get what I needed to get. And before I got truly recovered and I was white knuckling it, which I really didn't understand fully at the time, you know, I would be eating, and one of my grandbabies might ask me for a piece of my apple or something like that. And it was like, I would get very angry, you know. But underneath that anger was fear. Fear that there wasn't going to be enough for me. That selfishness. I wasn't going to have enough. I wasn't going to get what I needed. I was pretty mean, you know. And it all stemmed from self-centered fear, you know. And today, the difference is through the work of the steps and the higher power and all of you, thank you, God, that, you know, food is to nourish my body today. That's what it's for. And it's, for the first time in my life, food is in its proper place to nourish my body. I do get fearful sometimes around food still, but I tend to step it out. But it's nothing like it used to be, because I know God will provide, and, you know, I'm able to be present with my grandbabies today, You know, I'm able to be present with my kids. I'm able to be present with God and focus on being of service to God and others. And that's truly a gift that I'm so grateful for. And I'm just so grateful that Evie comes to Bill and reaches his hand out, you know, and Bill was selfish and unmindful of his welfare. But then, you know, after Evie starts to speak his language, the language of the heart, it eventually hits his heart. And I'm so grateful for that, because I would not have the life I have today if it wasn't for Bill and Bob and everyone who's got recovered before me and kept meetings like this alive. So thank you so much. That's all I have. I pass.
Thank you very much, Christine M. Sherry Josie, you're up next, and you'll be followed by Felicia D. Please go ahead, Sherry Jo.
Good morning. This is Sherry Josie, recovered compulsive eater in Southern California. Thank you, Elaine. Thanks so much to everyone making the meeting possible. Gosh, I love this chapter. I love the big book so much. I mean, I remember the first time I ever read it, and I felt like they were looking inside of my heart and my head, and I just thought, how do they know all of this stuff about me, and what is going on with me that I would relate to this so much? When I look at my big book, I look at the part that I underlined in this paragraph when I first read it the first time, and the part I underlined was the last couple sentences. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility, the very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. When I read that last sentence, drinkers are like that, I thought, I'm like that. How do they know this about me? And, you know, for me, the whole thing about compulsive overeating, of course it was a mental obsession. Of course it was a physical allergy. But I also used food to escape every single thing in my life that ever bothered me. God forbid I be uncomfortable for even 1 minute. God forbid I have fear like normal people do. I just couldn't handle it. I never felt like I could handle it. I always said to people, you know, if something happens to you on a scale of 1 to 10, you might say it feels like a 2, 10 being the worst. I felt like everything that happened to me was a 10. You know? Everything was so exaggerated in my mind. And then as I read the big book, I saw an explanation for that too. Later on, they start talking about the magnifying mind of the alcoholic. Everything that happens to us, so exaggerated and so big compared to everything else. So when I read that, you know, about the oasis, I was like, oh my God, that's what I've been doing with food my whole life. You know, it goes on in the big book and says too, or is it the 12 and 12, most alcoholics, you know, we're in full flight from reality. Oh my God, like I didn't need somebody to shove bamboo under my fingernails. If somebody wanted to torture me, all they had to do was make me live in reality without food for a day. That was like, I couldn't handle that. I was always running away from everything. The biggest word I heard when I came into the program, my first meeting that scared the crap out of me, was the word responsibility. Somebody said, we learn to take responsibility for ourselves. It was as if you'd said torture. I was like, no, I don't want to take responsibility for myself. And what we see here in this paragraph, what I see when I read it is, and Bill's not quite there yet, you know. He's resigned. But how could he have hope? He doesn't have any hope. He's been to the hospital. They couldn't even help him. But we see Roland coming to Evie. We see Evie coming to Bill. Bill's going to go to Dr. Bob. It's starting. You know, this is starting. And my Evie was my sister's partner at the time in 1984. And she had gotten sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, gosh, she doesn't even drink that much. And I thought, when I look at my eating, it's destroying me every single day. I thought, if she's an alcoholic and she's going to AA, I definitely need something. So she brought me the message, and it was a couple years after that that I finally was beaten into submission. But I'm just very grateful to study the book with all of you and for this paragraph. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sherry Josie. Okay, Felicia D., you're up next, and we may have time for one more share after Felicia. Please go ahead.
Hi, my name's Felicia, and I'm a compulsive overeater. When I came back in July, it was after somewhere between a 20 and a 25-year relapse, and I was trying to imagine how I was going to do this OA thing again. And I posted online looking for a sponsor. And my Ebby at the time was the woman who responded back and was like, you know, message me. And she told me about Vision. And she told me that I had to log on every day and listen and what I was going to be doing. And it's just so completely different than when I was in OA in the early 90s. And I have 93 days, I think. I had gotten to the point that I didn't think it could work. I thought that I was one of those people that was just couldn't do it, that it was impossible. And I'm just so grateful that she did service and messaged me and gave me the opportunity and told me about Vision so that I could take that lead. I don't think if I had had, without her hand reached out, I wouldn't have known about these meetings, and I certainly wouldn't have come and gotten abstinent. So I'm so grateful for my Ebby in this situation, and I'm so, so, so grateful for the reaching out. This is super hard for me. I hate sharing, but I'm just trying to do my part. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Felicia D. Appreciate you doing your part. We do have time for one more share.
This is Dion R. Dale.
Heard two people at once, Dion R. and Nancy L. So how about if we do 2 minutes each? Please go ahead, Dion.
Yes, hi. My name is Dion R., recover, compulsive overeater, and very grateful today to be a part of the process. And I just want to say thank you for allowing me to be here, and just heard so many interesting things, and just reminded me not only who was my Ebby and how can I be an Ebby to others. And with that, I'll pass and forfeit the rest to Nancy. Go right ahead. I'll pass.
Kind of you. Thank you. So, Nancy L., you do have 3 minutes. Please go ahead.
This is Nancy L., and I'm recovering in Georgia, and as of today, and I'm almost reluctant to tell this because it makes me feel cocky, I have gone 9 months without binging. My Ebby came to me and through AA. I'm not an alcoholic, but I was very addicted to someone who was an alcoholic through my codependency, and I was going to AA not to seek help for myself, but to seek help for my loved one. And while I sit in those meetings and I heard the alcoholics share their journey, I thought, I'm doing the same thing with food. But I never did my binging with a friend or a buddy. My binging was me and my food. And I didn't want anybody to ever see me eating that way. I was ashamed of what I was doing. I felt guilty over what I was doing. But I know when I sit in the AA meetings, something was wrong with the way I reacted with food. But it took going to AA, knowing that something was wrong, and then years and years of binge eating, trying to hide the fact that I was binge eating. And you can't hide the fact that you're binge eating when you continue to expand. And everybody probably knew what I was doing, and I was foolish enough to think nobody knew. But when I found OA, I immediately thought, I can do this. And I did it for a while, for about 90 days, and I got cocky and relapsed. And so I said, okay, I'll keep coming back. I'll do what they said. I'll keep coming back to OA. And I would get another 90 days and then get cocky again and relapse. So I identify so much with Bill, because he would have periods of not drinking. I would have periods of not binging. And then my cockiness would kick in. So I'm recovering, but I haven't binged today, and I haven't binged since January 1, 2020. But I don't want to sound cocky. I asked my higher power, the God of my understanding, to help me remain sober-minded and also remain humble. So I'm humble by the fact that I'm with a group of people who have suffered the same disease and obsession that I have. So I thank all of you for your service, and thank you for your sharing. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Nancy Al. And thanks to everybody who shared, came, listened, did service. Thank you. We're now going to transition the meeting by reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Pam N. please read? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Absolutely. Blessed morning, everyone. Pam N., recovered in upstate New York. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.